Chapter 44. Holden. From the outside, the damage to the Rocinante was barely noticeable. The 3-point defense cannon rounds fired by one of the UN destroyers had hit her just forward of the sick bay, and, after a short diagonal trip through the ship, exited through the machine shop 2 decks below. Along the way, one of them had passed through 3 cabins in the crew deck. Holden had expected the little botanist to be a wreck, especially after his crack about soiling himself. But when Holden had checked on him after the battle, he'd been surprised by the nonchalant shrug the scientist had given. "It was very startling," was all he'd said. It would be easy to write it off as shell shock. The kidnapping of his daughter, followed by months of living on Ganymede as the social structure collapsed. Easy to see Prax's calm as the precursor to a complete mental and emotional breakdown. God knew the man had lost control of himself 6 times, and most of them inconvenient. But Holden suspected there was a lot more to Prax than that. There was a relentless forward motion to the man. The universe might knock him down over and over again, but unless he was dead, he'd just keep getting up and shuffling ahead toward his goal. Holden thought he had probably been a very good scientist, thrilled by small victories, undeterred by setbacks, plodding along until he got to where he needed to be. Even now, just hours after nearly being cut in two by a high-speed projectile, Prax was below decks with Naomi and Avasarala patching holes inside the ship. He hadn't even been asked. He just climbed out of his bunk and pitched in. Holden stood above one of the bullet entry points on the ship's outer hull. The small projectile had left a perfectly round hole and almost no dimpling. It had passed through 5 centimeters of high tensile alloy armor so quickly, it hadn't even dented it.
"Found it," Holden said. "No light coming out, so it looks like they've already patched it on the inside."
"Coming,"
Amos said, then clumped across the hull on magnetic boots, a portable welding torch in his hand. Bobby followed in her fancy powered armor, carrying big sheets of patch material. While Bobby and Amos worked on sealing up the outer hull breach, Holden wandered off to find the next hole. Around him, the 3 remaining Martian warships drifted along with the Rocinante like an honor guard. With their drives off, they were visible only as small black spots that moved across the starfield. Even with the Rossi telling his armor where to look, and with the HUD pointing the ships out, they were almost impossible to see. Holden tracked the Martian cruiser on his HUD until it passed across the bright splash of the Milky Way's ecliptic. For a moment, the entire ship was a black silhouette framed in the ancient white of a few billion stars. A faint cone of translucent white sprayed out from one side of the ship, and it drifted back into the star-speckled black. Holden felt a desire to have Naomi standing next to him, looking up at the same sights that bordered on a physical ache.
"I forget how beautiful it is out here," he said to her over their private channel instead.
"You daydreaming and letting someone else do all the work?" she replied.
"Yeah. More of these stars have planets around them than don't. Billions of worlds. 500 million planets in the habitable zone was the last estimate. Think our great-grandkids will get to see any of them?"
"Our grandkids?"
"When this is over."
"Also," Naomi said, "at least one of those planets has the protomolecule masters on it. Maybe we should avoid that one."
"Honestly, that's the one I'd like to see. Who made this thing? What's it all for? I'd love to be able to ask. And at the very least, they share the human drive to find every habitable corner and move in. We might have more in common than we think.
They also kill whoever lived there first."
Holden snorted. "We've been doing that since the invention of the spear. They're just scary good at it."
"You found that next hole yet?"
Amos said over the main channel, his voice an unwelcome intrusion. Holden pulled his gaze away from the sky and back to the metal beneath his feet. Using the damage map the Rosie was feeding to his HUD, it took only a moment to find the next entry wound.
Yeah, right here, he said,
and Amos and Bobby began moving in his direction.
Cap, Alex said, chiming in from the cockpit. The captain of the MCRN cruiser is looking to talk to you.
Patch him through to my suit.
Roger, Alex said,
and then the static on the radio shifted in tone.
Captain Holden.
I read you, go ahead.
This is Captain Richard Tsang of the MCRN Cydonia. Sorry we weren't able to speak sooner. I've been dealing with damage control and arranging for rescue and repair ships.
I understand, Captain,
Holden said, trying to spot the Cydonia again, but failing.
I'm out of my hull patching a few holes myself. I saw you guys drive by a minute ago.
My XO says you'd ask to speak to me.
Yes, and thank her on my behalf for all the help so far, Holden said.
Listen, we burned through an awful lot of our stores in that skirmish. We fired 14 torpedoes and nearly half of our point defense ammunition. Since this used to be a Martian ship, I thought maybe you'd have reloads that would fit our racks.
Sure,
Captain Tsang said without a moment's hesitation.
I'll have the destroyer Sally Ride pull alongside for munitions transfer.
Holden said, shocked by the instant agreement. He'd been prepared to negotiate.
Thanks.
I'll pass along my intel officer's breakdown of the fight. You'll find it interesting viewing. But the short version is that first kill, the one that broke open the UN defense screen and ended the fight, that was yours. Guess they shouldn't have turned their backs on you.
You guys can take credit for it, Holden said with a laugh. I had a Martian Marine gunnery sergeant doing the shooting.
There was a pause. Then Tsang said,
when this is over, I'd like to buy you a drink and talk about how a dishonorably discharged UN naval officer winds up flying a stolen MCRN torpedo bomber crewed by Martian military personnel and a senior UN politician.
It's a damn good story, Holden replied.
Say, speaking of Martians, I'd like to get one of mine a present. Do you carry a marine detachment on the Cydonia?
Yes, why?
Got any force recon marines in that group?
Yes, again, why?
There's some equipment we'll need that you've probably got in storage.
He told Captain Tsang what he was looking for, and Tsang said, I'll have the Ride give you one when we do the transfer. The MCRN's Sally Ride looked like she'd come through the fight without a scratch. When she pulled up next to the Rosinante, her dark flank looked as smooth and unmarred as a pool of black water. After Alex and the Ride's pilot had perfectly matched course, a large hatch in her side opened up, dim red emergency lighting spilling out. Two magnetic grapples were fired across, connecting the ships with 10 meters of cable.
This is Lieutenant Graves, a girlish voice said. Prepare to begin cargo transfer on your order.
Lieutenant Graves sounded like she should still be in high school, but Holden said,
Go ahead, we're ready on this end.
Switching channels to Naomi, he said,
Pop the hatches, new fish coming aboard.
A few meters from where he was standing, a large hatch that was normally flush with the hull opened up into a meter-wide and 8-meter-long gap in the skin of the ship. A complicated-looking system of rails and gears ran down the sides of the opening. At the bottom sat three of the Rosinante's remaining ship-to-ship torpedoes.
7 in here, Holden said, pointing at the open torpedo rack, and 7 on the other side.
Roger, said Graves.
The long, narrow white shape of a plasma torpedo appeared in the Ride's open hatch, with sailors wearing EVA packs flanking it. With gentle puffs of compressed nitrogen, they flew the torpedo down along the two guidelines to the Rosie. Then, with the help of Bobby's suit-augmented strength, they maneuvered it into position at the top of the rack.
First one in position, Bobby said.
Got it, Naomi replied, and a second later the motorized rails came to life and grabbed the torpedo, pulling it down into the magazine.
Holden glanced at the elapsed time on his HUD.
Getting all 14 torpedoes transferred and loaded would take hours.
"Amos," he said, "where are you?"
"Just finishing that last patch down by the machine shop," the mechanic replied.
"You need something?"
"When you're done with that, grab a couple of EVA packs. You and I will go get the other supplies. Should be 3 crates of PDC rounds and some sundries."
"I'm done now. Naomi, pop the cargo door for me, would you?"
Holden watched Bobby and the ride sailors work, and they had 2 more torpedoes loaded by the time Amos arrived with 2 EVA packs.
"Lieutenant Graves, 2 crew from the Rocinante requesting permission to board and pick up the rest of the supplies."
"Granted, Rocinante." The PDC rounds came in crates of 20,000, and at full gravity would have weighed more than 500 kilos. In the microgravity of the coasting ships, 2 people with EVA packs could move 1, if they were willing to take their time and recharge their compressed nitrogen after every trip. Without a salvage mech or a small work shuttle available, there wasn't any other choice. Each crate had to be pushed slowly toward the aft of the Rocinante, through a 20-second-long burn from Amos's EVA pack. When it got to the aft of the ship, next to the cargo bay door, Holden would do an equally long thrust from his pack to bring the crate to a stop. Then the 2 of them would maneuver it inside and lock it to a bulkhead. The process was long, and at least for Holden, each trip had 1 heart-racing moment when he was firing the brakes to stop the crate. Every time, he had a brief, panicky vision of his EVA pack failing, and him and the crate of ammo drifting off into space while Amos watched. It was ridiculous, of course. Amos could easily grab a fresh EVA pack and come and get him, or the ship could drop back, or the ride could send a rescue shuttle, or any other of a huge number of ways he'd be quickly saved. But humans hadn't been living and working in space nearly long enough for the primitive part of the brain not to say, "I'll fall. I'll fall forever." The people from the ride finished bringing over torpedoes about the time Holden and Amos had locked the last crate of PDC ammo into the cargo bay.
"Naomi," Holden called on the open channel. "We all green?"
"Everything looks good from here. All of the new torpedoes are talking to the Rossi and reporting operational."
"Outstanding. Amos and I are coming in through the cargo bay airlock. Go ahead and seal the bay up. Alex, as soon as Naomi gives the all clear, let the Cydonia know we can do a fast burn to Io at the captain's earliest pleasure."
While the crew prepped the ship for the trip to Io, Holden and Amos stripped off their gear and stowed it in the machine shop. 6 gray discs, 3 on each bulkhead across the compartment from each other, showed where the rounds had ripped through this part of the ship.
"What's in that other box the Martians gave you?" Amos asked, pulling off 1 oversized magnetic boot.
"A present for Bobby," Holden said. "I'd like to keep it quiet until I give it to her, okay?"
"Sure, no problem, Captain. If it turns out to be 12 long-stemmed roses, I don't want to be there when Naomi finds out. Plus, you know, Alex."
"No, it's a lot more practical than roses," Holden started, then rewound the conversation in his head.
"Alex? What about Alex?"
Amos shrugged with his hands like a belter.
"I think he might have a wee bit of a thing for our ample Marine."
"You're kidding." Holden couldn't picture it. It wasn't as though Bobby were unattractive. Far from it. But she was also very big and quite intimidating. And Alex was such a quiet and mild guy. Sure, they were both Martians, and no matter how cosmopolitan a person got, there was something comforting in reminders of home. Maybe just being the only 2 Martians on the ship was enough. But Alex was pushing 50, balding without complaint, and wore his love handles with the quiet resignation of a middle-aged man. Sergeant Draper couldn't be more than 30 and looked like a comic book illustration, complete with muscles on her muscles. Unable to stop himself, his mind began trying to figure out how the 2 of them would fit together. It didn't work.
"Wow," was all he could say.
"Is it mutual?"
"No idea," Amos replied with another shrug. "The sergeant ain't easy to read.
But I don't think she'd do him any deliberate harm, if that's what you're asking. Not that, you know, we could stop her. Scares you too, does she?
Look, Amos said with a grin, when it comes to scrapes, I'm what you might call a talented amateur. But I've gotten a good look at that woman in and out of that fancy mechanical shell she wears. She's a pro. We're not playing the same sport.
Gravity began to return in the Rocinante. Alex was bringing up the drive, which meant they were beginning their run to Io. Holden stood up and took a moment to let his joints adjust to the sensation of weight again. He clapped Amos on the back and said,
Well, you've got a full load of torpedoes and bullets, 3 Martian warships trailing you, 1 angry old lady in tea withdrawal, and a Martian marine who could probably kill you with her own teeth. What do you do?
You tell me, Captain.
You find someone else for them to fight.